Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Simpuga, and this evening we'll talk about the impact of Ethiopia's state of emergency. And with us tonight is Yadesa Bojia. Yadesa is a Seattle-based graphic designer, fine artist, painter, and a designer, I'm told, of the African Union flag. He's also an activist. He joins us by phone from Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the show, Yadesa.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. This is a very important topic, and I'm glad to talk about it.
You're very much welcome. And joining us also is regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He joins us from Durban, South Africa, as usual. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you very much for inviting me, as always.
You're very much welcome. Gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight is the impact of the state of emergency in Ethiopia. And as we understand it, activists there are continuing their resistance to the February 16th state of emergency imposed by the government. Let me start with in Seattle, Washington. Yadesa, what's the update? Any update? We had there was some blockade of fuel earlier on in the week. There had been, that's when they started off the boycott. What's going on right now?
Well, right now, basically, what we've gone through is seeing the impact of the state of emergency. I think before we even talk about the state of emergency, it's very important to know that there's still a lot of people like me who are watching the Ethiopian politics forecasted that the state of emergency is not going to stop the boycott. And that's why the fuel boycott is still going on while the state of emergency is going on. But one of the side effects of the state of emergency is the blanket right that's given to the army to basically take matters on his hand and start killing and shooting and things like that. Ever since it happened, in my own count, more than 27 people are recorded killed, including a 10-year-old boy and a 15-year-old boy. So basically what's going on right now is the impact of what we are already afraid of is happening.
I see. Suleiman, state of emergency by nature means martial rule. I mean, there's no law there to be followed. Anything can happen in that situation.
And it is, let's put it that way, a state of emergency, sign of restlessness in the country, sign of a situation which is going out of hand. And when you reach a state of emergency, means government is determined to take the law in its own hands now, to act out of the law. Unfortunately for Ethiopia, this is not the beginning. It is a culmination of a continued resistance from the people. We can say it's a continuation of the unfinished business from the elections of 2005. I think since then, Ethiopia has never settled down. The people have realized the power which they have. They have decided they won't rest until they have liberated themselves from this autocratic leadership which has forced itself on the people of Ethiopia.
I see. Mr. Yadesa, there are reports also of the killings. You alluded to the killings already, but the state media said soldiers on Saturday shot at 9 civilians near the town on the border town of Mayale, and they say they mistakenly shot them. Do you believe that was a mistake?
Oh, no. Nobody with the right mind thinks that's a mistake, because one of the proof for that, the killing continued even after they called it a mistake. And that tells you there is an intention behind it. Another real example would be there is a guy named Taye Danda, which is a spokesperson to the Oromia Federal Government Human Rights Section, who basically said that is not an error and arrested yesterday. Basically, the government still now arresting even people who work under the government when they or question the move or the command post. So that will tell you that there is an intention behind it. And we simply know that unless we try and fool ourselves, that there is no mistake when it comes to a government going to a city and shooting innocent people, including teachers and school people. Right now, that caused a big refugee influx to countries like Tanzania, countries like Kenya, mm-hmm. and they're talking about it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that thing already about 5,000 people having fled to Kenya already from the border there. Suleiman, there has been a state of emergency in Ethiopia before, but now people seem to have woken up and taken their activism, their protest a notch higher.
Precisely, Douglas, because we are in the 21st century. These dictatorial regimes had had a feeling that they will reign forever. People now are more enlightened, more exposed. They have got all sorts of communication methods. People want their rights. People want to be included in the governance of their countries. So the feeling that one group has got the monopoly of arms is becoming a cake in Africa. People are rising up. Now the Ethiopians are determined. They are ready to do whatever they can to ensure that they get their rights back in their hands. So it is not going to be an easy. It is a sign of a system which is beginning to crumble. The center is failing to hold. We are seeing a lot of uncoordinated movement of forces, as they are saying. They are calling them mistakes, and others are not calling them mistakes. So that uncoordinated movement of forces is a sign that the center is failing to hold, and there is a lot of pressure from the population. And if they maintain and they sustain their struggle, God willing, they might be able to get their rights back.
Yes, Edessa, we are getting reports of some deaths, people fleeing to neighboring countries. We haven't talked yet about those who will be arrested and who will continue to be arrested. We understand you were known for your relentless work of activism, especially during the global campaign to secure the release of Bekele Gabba, who had been an opposition Ethiopian figure. How do you see this campaign going different from what you have been actively engaged in?
Well, are you talking about the campaign that's going on right now?
Yes, yes.
Well, basically, when a lot of the problem in Ethiopia is people from outside kept on getting misinformed about what's going on in Ethiopia. People in Ethiopia know that the government is not doing releasing these people in good intention, because when they release them, they will not release them based on the merits of what they are going to do next. They release them because they are pressured by Kero, which is the young people who are protesting on the streets, almost paralyzing the country. And I think, to Suleiman's point, Africans are really right now are awakened, and young people are asking their rights. And you can see that trend even going to the United States right now in the gun debate. But that is the problem with the government, is not being trusted and given a solution to the problem. And even if the struggle seemed a little bit different, the bases are the same. And like Suleiman said, for a long time, the Ethiopian government was basically suppressing people's voices. And I think finally it comes to erupt. And the dangerous part of this is other elements that we need to talk about, which is ethnic element of it. So we are keep on pushing people not to choose that route and to be their brothers and sisters keepers, even if the government is not doing it right.
Before I, again, further to you, to what extent is this a result of the resignation of the Prime Minister?
I think the resignation of the President, of the Prime Minister, even if it seemed like a big deal, for some of us who are watching the government, know that the Prime Minister to begin with is basically a Manchurian candidate who does not have a power to change most of the things in Ethiopia. And so, but I have to reemphasize the naming of the new Prime Minister might be a signal to move in the country. Even if we don't think that just because somebody's named, the things will change quickly, but it can show and signal a new move by the government. So it's very important, and I think I'm watching more what they're going to name rather than who left the position, because we believe that was aligned with our teams to begin with.
I see. So, Suleiman, basically it's a system. We don't change the system. Whether you change the figurehead on top, no, it doesn't make a difference.
Yes,
precisely, Douglas. The people want change. As I've said, 2005 elections were rigged. After that, terror was unleashed on the people. The people went on the side and started resisting. Hundreds were arrested, regardless of being released, but after many years of injustice in prison unnecessarily, now the situation is going out of hand. The whole system needs to be overhauled. We need a new dispensation, not only in Ethiopia, but in so many African countries which are like Ethiopia. Having one regime staying in power since 1991, it does not help. Having one regime since 1991, rigging elections in its favor, monopolizing power in its favor, excluding other people, thinking that they are better, regardless of the good economic development which has been taking place for quite a number of years, regardless of the initiatives which they are making, which show that the economy is growing, people still need to be included in the governance of the country. So until when the ruling clique realizes that there is need for an inclusive dispensation, there isn't going to be any rest in Ethiopia, like in other countries which are also beginning to rise up, like the way Ethiopia is rising up on the continent.
And just a further to that, you talk of devolvement, but you can't antagonize the largest ethnic grouping in the country, which are on the Oromo region.
Yeah, well, the Oromo region is, a lot of people try to make it just about ethnic group, but it's not that, because but the Oromo region also have a lot of land that's basically looted again from it by these leaders. And the question of Oromo people is trying to be, like Suleiman explained, trying to be and owning their own fate in their own country. And that question is always twisted as if it is just an ethnic question. But this question is not just an ethnic question, because, like Suleiman mentioned, even before Oromo problem, there was an Anuak problem where the land was looted from Anuak people and given to big companies. And there are other places that are going through the same problem. But the Oromo people are the majority people and keep on losing its voice from year to year. And I think now we come to the point where the status quo is not acceptable, and thus we're dealing with the problem we have right now.
I see. And to be fair, in fact, to your point, it's certainly ethnic. Other groups have joined in and expressed their dissatisfaction.
Well, the other groups are always, for example, in Nyan time, most of the time when the people were being chased out to the neighboring countries or the land be given to big companies, the other groups didn't have a whole lot of, the number was a little bit small, but it doesn't mean that other people kept silent. There are people who were in the Amhara side and Oromo side that were raising their voice. The best example can be a person, Obang Metto, which lives in D.C., who's always raising the voice, and we're supporting him. So the problem with the numbers and the majority, the Oromo people have a lot of voice and a lot of land. And yes, of course, Oromo people are raising their voices too and needs to be recognized. But there are other people who are going through the same problem too, and that needs to be recognized. And this is not just about ethnic power. It's about people trying to get hold of their life and ask for more opening in the government and in their day-to-day life and democracy.
I see. In other words, it's the ruling clique, the political elite, Suleiman, versus the masses, the people.
Exactly, Douglas. Dictatorship is dictatorship. It doesn't matter whether it is benevolent. The belief that development will attract people to forget about their rights or forget about their rights to the rights and responsibilities to their nation is a deception. People want to be included. People want to be consulted. People want to be part and parcel of the governance of the country. people want to take a decision. This belief that people override the rights of the people because they are dispensing development on them is becoming archaic. People are saying, no, we want to be on the table ourselves. Yep. Whether we are poor or not poor, but we don't want our land to be taken without us getting involved. We want to see the decision being taken. We want the economy, if it grows, the resources to be distributed equally, not to be distributed that clique which is taking all the decision. So there is a long way for Ethiopia to settle down until when the ruling clique realizes that there is a need for a dispensation. That is the bottom line. The bottom line is that there is a need for an overhaul of the system. There is a need for a new thinking. There is a need to see people of Ethiopia as being equal and being a party to the decision which govern their country.
I see. Well, let's take a very short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of the impact of Ethiopia's a state of emergency. Welcome back. In case you are just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing the impact of Ethiopia's state of emergency. Our panelists are Yadesa Bojia and Suleiman Mugura from South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One. Yadesa, Suleiman there mentioned a need for an overhaul of the system. In this current political climate, how possible is that?
Well, not only is it not possible, it's the only way out, to tell you the truth. Because if you really think about it, in Ethiopia, there is, if you open the Bloomberg and the Economist magazines and see Ethiopia growing 5%, 10% every year, what they're talking about is basically the elites benefiting from the country. Like Suleiman mentioned, people are not being consulted when they lose their land, when they lose their culture. The one of the most important part of this land issue is not just about land, it's about the way of life. It's about changing the culture. For example, in Oromo culture, land and we basically share the same kind of trait with the Native Americans where we say we belong to land, not the land belong to us. So there is this important dichotomy that's being disenfranchised by the government when they take their land from the farmers and basically sell it to other big companies. So the way that government was doing business was completely denounced by the people multiple times, and they also knew that the government is not responding back to them the way any government do. So there is only one way of moving forward is to listen to our people, to make them the part of their way of life, and to consult them. There is no other way other than that. Because if there is no other way than that, because if the state of emergency would be effective if it was a way to go. But it's not being effective because the fuel is being stopped, the riot is going on, even if the state of emergency is imposed.
So in that case, what limits will the, or what extent will the government go, Suleiman, to crack down on these protesters? Because it seems they have unlimited leeway to do whatever they want to do and go out with it, as has happened in the past several years.
For sure, it's a very difficult situation to imagine and to think what the government is going to come about, because, number one, this is a military government. Remember, the current government is part of the breed, which is popularly known as the breed, which was popularly known as the breed of new
leaders.
New leaders, now which turned out to be a new breed of dictators. That project has proved to be hopeless. All those so-called new breed of the leaders, they have turned out to be dictators. They use the same template. They are ruthless. They are cruel. They don't care about the citizens. They are selfish. They will go out of their way to do anything to maintain, to remain in power. So already, as you have seen, people have been dying. It's not only recently, I think from 2005, as I've said, from 1995, since the new constitution was established, there have been wrangles there and there, 2000 wrangles, 2005 wrangles. And from 2016, people have been dying, and they don't seem to be bothered. They seem to be continuing.
Mm-hmm.
As you have said, they are announcing state of emergency, and people are dying. They are not bothered to come up with any new initiative. There seems to be no new initiative, no new signs of coming down to the level of the people. So they are going to continue killing. We don't know where they will end. That is a very unfortunate situation which is unfolding, unfortunately.
I see. Yadesa, now, given all this, some analysts have said what gives the regime in Addis Ababa the strength and the audacity to do what they're doing is the diplomatic and financial support they get from the West. They are hailed as a front line on the fight against terrorism. They get a lot of financial support, a lot of diplomatic backing, because they really get condemned for any act they do. To what extent is the international community a contributor to this chaos situation?
Well, in a way, the situation is kind of created by the Western and also the Eastern supporters from China and from the United States, too, because they were we kept on telling the violation of human rights and all these issues, but Japan government find this golden goose where they can use their strategic placement in the Horn of Africa as a way to trade to Western countries or other allies to look the other way when they violate all these rules for years. But now we came to face with this serious problem in which no one can save them. And also that would be also visible when the United States government actually told them that not to pass a state of emergency. The government refused. That also opened an eyes in Western government, I believe, to show them where this government that they supported for a long time basically played them for the fool. I think most of the solution did not come from Western countries, or from foreign countries, but from Ethiopian government and people in Japan government themselves. By opening the government and also bring cool heads like people like Lamma Magarsa, which actually showed a little bit of sign where they can listen to people who are protesting on the streets and also work with the government without creating a vacuum. But they're not doing all of that. The sad part is if they really be honest about the problem and open for a clear dialogue, there might be a chance in Ethiopia to curb this problem. But the passing of the state of emergency, the killing of people every single day, and the way they go by it, by lying and by basically denying things, what we see right on live TV, like the counting of the vote and state of emergency, for example, believe us that the government, the solution is not going to come from the government. And I hope the international community understood that and keep on pressuring them. But we also wanted to let them know that this problem is not going to just fade out unless a serious discussion is made.
I see. So, Suleiman, we haven't had as much outcry from the so-called international community.
Yes. Unfortunately, the international community has got its problems also. Much as it has been responsible for cementing the regime in Ethiopia, like regimes in Uganda, regimes in DRC, Rwanda, that tripartite group. But this one now of Ethiopia comes at the time when the international community, which has supported them, is also having its own problem. As you realize, people like Blair had supported the EPRDF for a long time. Now, Britain has got, after Brexit, It has got its domestic problems to solve. It is still entangled in its own politics. In America, in USA also, which has been a big support for these regime, dictatorial regimes, the regime in US seems not to be caring about Africa for the time being. So within that suspense, the Ethiopian government now has got the privilege to do whatever it wants. But at the same time, we cannot rule out the fact that other countries may rise up, countries like France, the international community, countries like France might come to the rescue of the people when the humanitarian situation becomes bad. Mm-hmm. But it is a lesson to the international community that however much you may support a regime, as long as the regime is dictatorial, however much financial support you may give it, time comes when the people override that regime. I think these regimes are beginning to crumble until when the international community realizes that they need to support the people, they need to call for initiatives like national dialogue for people of Ethiopia or national dialogue for people of Uganda or DRC. There will be no progress. Whatever money they have invested in these dictators, it will have to go down the drain. So those who are paying taxes in USA, those who are paying taxes in the UK, they need to put pressure on their government to turn the things around and support the democracy in Africa.
Yeah, as we wind up, Edessa, do you see those in power in Addis Ababa somehow feeling the pinch of these protests and protests and boycotts and all kind of thing?
So you said, do they understand it?
Prior to this, that I think it led to the release of some prisoners. I think to the pressure of the people. Do you think they are feeling the pressure, or they just ignoring it?
Well, they definitely felt the pressure, but the problem is they keep on coming back to the same solution of trying to stop it by gun. I think what's sad about the whole situation is that the government got a chance to address the problem, and they talked the talk, but they did not walk the walk. Like James Baldwin said, you know, I don't believe what you say because I see what you do. Most young people on the street knew that the government kept on saying, for example, the prime minister, the outgoing prime minister, made a speech saying, we're going to fix our problem, we are corrupted, we are looting the country. He said all of these things. And then the solution never came back. People who are still losing the country are in power. People who are actually accused of human rights violation are in power. People who are actually were killing people when they say they have a problem were now back into power with the state of emergency. So even if they felt the problem, they actually not doing anything with it. And that's the saddest part of what's happening right now. And that's what kept me up at night, is because the people in the leadership and are actually not understanding the gravity of the situation.
I see. Suleiman, 10 seconds. We're out of time. A conclusion. Do you see things changing soon?
Not likely, because the intransigence of the government, but we hope they will come to their senses. Ethiopia needs peace. Ethiopia needs a new dispensation, and we are praying for it as a continent. And it's not only Ethiopia, but there is need for change of these regimes which came in a long time ago, which have stayed for 20, 30 years. There is need for change in Uganda. There is need for a change in Rwanda. There is need for a change in Burundi, change in DRC, and so on, and Cameroon, Togo.
Yes.
All these ones have made the continent so restless.
Okay.
So we need to get a new dispensation on the continent so that
we are out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to Yadesa Boijia and Suleiman Mugula. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganya, and our engineer tonight was Linus Remkos. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Stay tuned for Africa News tonight.